I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, Health Matters, presented by SSM Health. Here's your host, KMOX Health Editor, Fred Bottomer.
Hi there, and thanks a lot for joining me again. I really do appreciate it. Hope you're having a great weekend. Lots to talk about today. Coming up, we'll hear from a local cardiologist about an increase being seen in broken heart syndrome. We'll also hear a reminder for women to keep up with their breast care and find out about concerns for stroke victims not coming in for treatment soon enough. But first, let's start the show the way we always do with our co-host, Dr. Fred Buchholz. Dr. Buchholz is a slew care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchholz, thanks for joining us again.
My pleasure.
So what's the update on how things are looking in the St. Louis area when it comes to new coronavirus cases?
Yeah, it's steady. You know, we've talked the last couple weeks about this idea of, you know, kind of worrying about this kind of large surge coming, or, you know, the numbers, the rate of numbers was certainly troubling. You know, we're still having a kind of an increase growth of cases, but the growth rate seems to be slowing. And certainly from a hospitalization standpoint, it's been pretty steady. You know, trying to think of the dates now, I guess almost 2 weeks ago. So we have, two weekends ago, I should say, you know, we had a pretty large bump and I was panicking quite a bit. But then over the course of the next 2 weeks or so, it's just kind of stayed about the same, if not trickled down slightly. Not enough to say this is really a significant trend, but the numbers have certainly kind of held steady, not getting to levels where kind of in crisis mode.
Still concerned about testing and PPE?
Yeah, you know, just kind of dealing with this week of we'd love to have the ability to do more tests, and it is, we're limited in, you know, two interesting things. One is the quality of tests out there. So there's a lot of other tests that just, you know, are my superiors and the people that really look at this field just aren't to the standards to really, you know, allow us to make good decisions. And then for the equipment we do have, it's just getting, you know, those, it's not even just running the test, but just, you know, the nasal swabs, the reagents or the chemicals you use to run this test, that type of equipment is really hard to come by. And it's hard to expand our capacity, frankly. And that's been, as I said many, many times before, it's a massive source of frustration. And the delays are causing problems. You know, we're wasting PPE waiting for, tests to take longer because of all these delays of getting, the logistical delays of getting supplies. Not for a lack of wanting to or wherewithal to get it. It's just there's just a limitation nationally about what we can get.
CNN's Dr. Sanjay Gupta this week came up with his five keys to reversing the surge that's going on nationwide. Here's what he says.
So wearing a mask consistently, maintaining social distance, avoiding close indoor gatherings such as bars. And the reason is that you're in a place for a long period of time and you're close to people and you're typically not wearing a mask in those situations. Stay away from large crowds and wash your hands often. If we as a country did these things for several weeks, 3 or 4 weeks, we'd be looking at the backside of this curve. Regardless of where you live, regardless of what the policies are in your area, if we honestly, diligently did this in a widespread way, which isn't asking a lot, it's not a shutdown, it's just asking to do these basic things for 3 to 4 weeks, we'd be looking at the backside of this curve.
Those five tips seem awfully familiar, don't they?
Yeah, no, I feel like a broken record. I'm sure Dr. Gupta does at a much larger scale than just myself. So, you know, I can't emphasize it enough. And I think where my frustration is, I get that they're uncomfortable. I get that you know, we want to enjoy our life. It's, you know, the weather this last couple of weeks in St. Louis has been absolutely pristinely beautiful. You know, people want to be outside and interact with each other. I'm right there with you. But, you know, wearing a mask all day, you know, we have surgeons that, you know, do a transplant operation for 12 hours at a time. You know, them wearing a mask is not an option. They have to. If they can do it, we can do it. And, you know, I think avoiding those key places, clearly indoors, clearly where there's air running around, clearly where people may or may not have their masks, and you're in close proximity for a long amount of time, that seems to be where everything pops out. So I think, to me, aside from the stuff everybody's doing, that's probably the most important one we have to focus on right now.
We're talking with Dr. Fred Buchholz. Dr. Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchholz, this past week we learned that Illinois Congressman Rodney Davis was diagnosed with COVID-19. After suffering what he said was only a low-grade fever.
I have been taking my temperature with the same thermometer throughout this pandemic in the morning and at night. So I'm kind of just judge what my normal temperature should be. Yesterday morning, like any morning, I was getting up. I was actually getting ready to go do some exercise. And mm-hmm. I took my temp, and it was 99, which, you know, wouldn't raise a concern for a lot of people. But the thermometer I have usually has me about 97.3. So I took it again. It was 99. I called my wife and I said, you know, before I go do some more hours with constituents, I think I ought to try and figure out how to get in and get a rapid test done at one of our facilities in the district. I did it. They called me back later in the day and told me I was positive.
And he had no other symptoms other than that.
No. I mean, I had a scratchy throat, but, you know, I chalked that up to being 50 degrees in the morning instead of 80 degrees in the morning like last week. It's a mystery. I think it's a mystery to almost everybody. You know, I talked to the Office of Attending Physician. That's the house doctors out in Washington. And they got a lot of experience in dealing with some of this stuff. I talked with my local physician, and the attending physician said, as likely I picked it up in the last 48 hours before my symptoms. And that would have put me in my district doing open office hours where we followed all the proper protocols. We were socially distanced. Mm-hmm. We had masks on, we had hand sanitizer, but obviously there was a time during that day I must not have done enough somewhere and picked it up.
Is that a common story that you hear?
Well, not even that. I mean, remember, you know, I think the vast majority of people that get COVID are probably asymptomatic. I mean, that's how the spread's really so effectively. The interesting thing about fevers, just even, you know, outside of COVID, just with any infection is, you know, if you have a fever, it's certainly a pretty good sign you have an infection. There's some other things that can cause fevers too, but, you know, as a general rule of thumb, fever, you've got to think infection. But, you know, as many as 80% of people that have an infection may not have a fever, or you may not catch the fever when you're measuring them on a routine or semi-routine basis. So that fact doesn't surprise me at all. In fact, that's just what clinical medicine is. So, you know, what I tell anybody, and, you know, any kind of illness, anything you feel where you just feel like you may have a little bit of a bug, so to speak, you know, probably in my mind warrants a COVID test. Now, whether or not we have the supplies, whether you get the results back, but, you know, I think it presents in a manifold of ways. There's some typical ways, but there's lots of not typical ways. And again, a lot of people are asymptomatic, you know, so they're walking around with it and, you know, spreading it to others and not knowing it. And that's certainly possible. That's what's made this so effective in terms of its transmissibility or ability to infect others.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis says it's okay to hug the elderly if you're wearing PPE.
Look, I'm comfortable with the PPE. Hell, hug them. I mean, come on. Like, it's not gonna. If you have PPE on and you hug and you don't sneeze or do something on them, you're gonna be fine. Okay, it's very, that'd be very low. Now, obviously, if you're there for 30 minutes doing that and then you do, well, then that's gonna be a different situation. But to just go give a hug, I mean, I think that you could do that, and I think that would be very meaningful.
A lot of doctors are slamming Governor DeSantis's advice there. What do you think?
Well, it's a rule I always have when you get advice from anybody. You know, their believability and expertise has to play some degree of a role in the sense that, you know, I certainly wouldn't ask a hockey player how to play baseball, I guess, for the best example I can come up with on the fly. So, you know, I think Florida is a state where they had some early success, and clearly now, from a public health standpoint, has been a place that certainly has struggled the most. And Miami has probably been our epicenter for the last few months. So I'm not sure this is expertise I'm willing to trust. I think what you do with the elderly, particularly, I'm assuming you want to hug a loved one, not just a random elderly person on the street. I think that's a discussion of what the risks are and what you're willing to tolerate. And again, I think definition of PPE here is purposely vague. I mean, we're still debating here in the States and across the world about, for healthcare providers, is the perfect PPE an N95, you know, that kind of more intensive particulate mask, or just a regular surgical mask. You know, that still is a kind of a complete unknown. The CDC recommends right now a surgical mask, but, you know, there's some cynics amongst us, and I'm not advocating this. I'm just saying that this has been the discussion, is the CDC kind of providing cover to the fact that nationally there's no way we have enough N95s to adequately protect our healthcare workers. And so, you know, the fact that we have that perception, or that perception is out there, it sounds a little paranoid. But the same token, you know, we've talked a long time ago, Fred, I think a lot in the healthcare community feel like we haven't gotten really great guidance from our national leadership in this about, you know, how to protect ourselves, how to help with the logistics of getting equipment, all these things. And it's made a lot of people feel vulnerable. So, you know, what the right PPE here to do these types of things is, I think there's still some ambiguity with us in the medical profession about what to do to protect ourselves, let alone do these types of interactions. That said, you know, touch and community and being with your loved ones is really important. I think the rates of depression, I'm sure, have gone up because those interactions aren't there in all of our communities. So that's the balance you have to play here. So I think it's a decision you have to have with your loved ones about what the appropriate risks are. I leave that to an individual decision, but I'm not sure I would listen to a governor of a state that's, you know, in the middle of a wildfire of an epidemic for his expertise. I'll just leave it at that.
Dr. Buckle, thanks a lot for your time this week. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, Fred. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
Dr. Fred Buckle is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Coming up, doctors fear the coronavirus pandemic is leading to an increase in cases of broken heart syndrome. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Now, back to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. A new study finds broken heart syndrome has increased during this coronavirus pandemic. Here to talk with us about that is Dr. Aaron Tang. Dr. Tang is a cardiologist with the SSM Health Medical Group in St. Charles County. Dr. Tang, thanks for joining us again.
Hey, Fred. Thank you very much for having me.
So describe broken heart syndrome. What is it?
A broken heart syndrome, or stress cardiomyopathy, as we call it, is a condition where the heart is not moving correctly, similar to how it does in a heart attack, except it's in the absence of blockages of the coronary arteries, which is what causes a normal heart attack. It presents in a similar way as a heart attack, as with chest discomfort, shortness of breath, but it's induced usually by a large physical trauma or maybe an emotional stress, such as the loss of a family member or something along that line. Sometimes it occurs with large mass casualty events, et cetera. And it's a phenomena that we're still trying to understand fully. But it's something that recently, at least, has been, there's some suggestion that it's been occurring more often during the current time with the COVID-19 pandemic.
Normally, how often does it occur?
Most studies show that it happens between 1% to 2% of the time. The incidence is about 1% to 2% when you take regular time periods of people having heart attacks. So let's say you have 100 people having heart attacks in a certain period of time, about one or two of those people will come in with what looks like stress cardiomyopathy.
Have you ever seen a case of this?
Yeah, we see cases of this often. We saw one actually last week with a lady that was having high emotional stress situation at home, came in and started having chest discomfort, and when we did the cardiac catheterization, it didn't show any significant blockages to the arteries to explain what was going on. So that was chalked up as being broken heart syndrome.
Is this always fatal, or can you recover from it?
Often people who have broken heart syndrome have recovery. They're more likely to recover their heart function in comparison to people who have traditional heart attacks. So it is more likely, but there are people that can have fatal outcomes from this. It's just more rare in their case to have that occur.
And Dr. Tang, you mentioned that we're seeing it occur more frequently now as a side effect of the COVID quarantine. What are some of the reasons for that?
Well, to clarify, there is a recent study that came out of Ohio. And what they did was they took a period of time, I believe the period of time was between April to June. They noticed that there was an increase in the incidence of broken heart syndrome as compared to other slices of time before the pandemic period. And their assumption with this data was that potentially the increased stresses associated with the quarantine, unemployment, et cetera, is a cause for this. I can't make that correlation myself. It's just a suggestion given this data. But the theory behind at least the authors of that study was that the additional social and economic stressors that are occurring now may be contributing. However, it is impossible to link those for sure. There has to be additional studies performed, and the way that those experiments have to be conducted have to be conducted in a different manner to be able to actually make a correlation.
Dr. Tang, what are the biggest keys to taking care of your heart, especially during this pandemic?
You know, all the traditional factors that your cardiologist would tell you during this time and any other time is going to be making sure that you're taking your medications to keep your blood pressure in a normal range, making sure that if you take cholesterol medications, you continue to take those as prescribed, regular cardiovascular, regular exercise for your cardiovascular health is going to be the best thing to keep you healthy. And from a heart standpoint, that way, making sure your diet is not full of saturated fat. These are the things that are going to be the best ways to continue to keep your heart healthy, whether it's during the pandemic or it's after the pandemic is over. Another thing that I wanted to mention was that it seems that there is an increased incidence of people being scared to come to the hospital when they're having chest discomfort, when they normally, before this time, would have come to the hospital. I think that if you are concerned that you're having a heart attack or any sort of cardiac pain, you should seek professional attention at the hospital now, no different than you would have before.
We're talking with Dr. Aaron Tang. Dr. Tang is a cardiologist with the SSM Health Medical Group in St. Charles County. We currently have several cardinals recovering from COVID-19. I hear that cardiologists are especially concerned about virus-caused heart stress in athletes. What's heart stress, and is that a concern?
Well, heart stress, the term stress is used pretty broadly. So what we use as for the word stress is an increased metabolic demand that the heart is requiring to do whatever activity it needs to do, whether it's pump harder because you're running bases or walking upstairs or any sort of activity that increases the metabolic need of the body. So the heart is built to be able to deal with a resting amount of stress and then some amount of stress beyond that. Athletes have usually a larger reserve because of the training that they've undergone. Because of this, because they are put in situations though where they're having an increased amount of their increased ability to stress their heart, I would imagine the concern would be that because COVID-19 has affected the heart in some way, it would reduce their amount of potential ability to achieve that stress level. Thus, maybe it would result in damage to the heart in that case because, you know, their heart is not able to get to the potential as before. I can see how this would be a concern. It's something that they're going to obviously continue to monitor with these athletes. And I think that the way that it would normally present would be that the athletes would develop symptoms of chest discomfort or other things at lower levels of activity than they normally would have given their previous training. So, again, we're in a situation where these things are unknown, but we're continuing to monitor, and we would, you know, try to get in front of these situations before, you know, any sort of lasting damage can occur.
So I guess like in most people, no one recovery process fits all people.
Unfortunately, in this situation, it's even more so unknown because this is a new novel virus that we don't have a lot of long-term data to look back upon to try to predict the future. So, yes, in this case, everyone's recovery is going to be individualized, and hopefully, and sometime in the future, we'll be able to collect this aggregate data and have a treatment plan for people in the future. But I mean, like you said, right now, it's pretty customized per person. So,
good deal. Dr. Tang, anything else you want to add?
You know, I just wanted to emphasize, again, like I mentioned before, that if you are concerned about your cardiovascular health, contact your cardiologist. And if you have chest discomfort, that you are concerned that you're having any sort of cardiac ailment or heart attack, then please go to the hospital. That's going to be your best bet of taking care of yourself and making the best recovery possible.
Dr. Tang, thanks a lot for your time. Really appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you very much for having me.
Dr. Aaron Tang is a cardiologist with the SSM Health Medical Group in St. Charles County. Coming up, a reminder for women not to neglect their breast care during this pandemic. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on KMOX.
Now, back to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. It's easy during this pandemic to kind of neglect some of our basic health care needs. This week, we have a warning from breast care specialists about women neglecting their mammograms. Here to talk with us about that is Dr. Stephanie Schnepp. Dr. Schnepp is a surgeon and medical director of the SSM Health St. Mary's Hospital Breast Center. Dr. Schnepp, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
So what are you seeing when it comes to women and breast care?
Well, you know, this year we everything started out very normal for everyone, and then somewhere around early March, mid-March, we started slowing things down with the routine medical care. And so between mid-March and the end of May, we weren't doing a lot of our normal routine screening tests. We still were seeing people in for testing for mammograms and ultrasounds and biopsies if they had a new problem or symptom. They felt something different, something was going on different that they had noticed or their doctors had noticed. But, of course, we were seeing a lot less of that because people also weren't necessarily going into their doctors for their routine visits either. We basically were only seeing people who had something really obviously going on. We were missing all of the little tiny cancers that are detected on screening tests because we just weren't doing the screening tests for 2 months. Now, for 2 months, that's okay to delay some of that because most breast cancers aren't going to move that quickly that they would change in a few weeks or a month or so. However, at this point, we're now going on, 5 months or so since that time frame. And so if people are behind on their mammogram that they were supposed to have had in the spring, and now it's almost fall, end of summer, we're going on a little bit long of a time frame where there could be a very small cancer there that we don't know about yet that could be unfortunately growing. And so I'm concerned now, we all are concerned now that we may be seeing some people unfortunately kind of delayed in finding their cancers a little later than we otherwise could have. We do know that mammograms are your best way to find a cancer at the earliest that we possibly could find it. And so coming in for those routine mammograms, even when people feel well and feel like there's no problem, is very important still, because it's still, you know, everything's still happening. All the other health issues are still out there, even though we're all thinking COVID is our priority to avoid. There are other things going on that we still need to keep up with and keep our overall health up.
What message do you have for women that might be afraid to come in?
Well, we have certainly made our medical offices and medical buildings some of the safest places to go in public now, I think. You know, very early on, we changed a lot of things as far as, you know, doing all of the, you know, increased cleaning and sanitation, which we were always very clean places, but we've done more and more of cleaning off different surfaces, door handles, all those things people are concerned with. Probably more important than that, actually, though, is the masks. We have had everyone in our buildings wearing masks, both employees, patients, and visitors. We are still limiting visitors to just one per person now, and in the hospital only during small hours. During the outpatient office visits, most of the time visitors are encouraged to kind of stay out in our outer lobby even and not even come in the main waiting room. So, you know, the whole vision of the crowded waiting rooms that used to be commonplace in medical offices and even mammogram centers sometimes, we really just don't have that anymore. So that's probably the biggest thing, is that we are keeping our spaces. We've adjusted our schedule to keep it so that we really keep people flowing through and they're not sitting in that waiting room as much as possible. We're getting people checked in quickly and efficiently and back for their exams very quickly and efficiently without a lot of time. Here at St. Mary's, we've actually even skipping a step of there's like an intermediate waiting room where people used to go and change and put their things in lockers and things like that. Now they're being brought back directly to the mammogram rooms in most cases, and not having that extra step of leaving their things in the lockers and another place to stop and wait. They're going more directly back in for their exams. Then they'll just change clothes in the exam room. The mammogram tech will take the mammogram images, and they'll be able to stay in there and change back to their clothing. And then again, they're doing the extra cleaning in between the visits. So we've also adjusted the flow of traffic so that people, there's one entrance, one exit, instead of people going in and out the same way, just like you've seen in some other buildings and stores. We also have the plexiglass barriers at our check-in desks, where people are, you know, protected from the each other there, even though, again, we're also using masks on everyone as well. So just so many steps that we have taken to try to ensure that this is one of the safest places that people can go, and they can come in and get their routine medical care without really fearing that this is a place that they're concerned of catching any virus at.
Dr. Schnepp, what about taking a temperature when you come in for your treatment or for your mammogram?
Yes, we're absolutely doing that. Everyone who comes in the door is asked a set of questions of any symptoms and things like that, and they are checked for their temperature. And we're making sure that anyone, you know, coming in doesn't have any recent exposures or symptoms or a fever that would make us think that they might be at a higher risk of having COVID.
We're talking with Dr. Stephanie Schnepp. Dr. Schnepp is a breast surgeon and medical director of the Breast Center at SSM Health St. Mary's Hospital. Dr. Schnepp, does having breast cancer increase your risk for getting COVID-19, and how does it affect your body?
Yes, and it's not so much necessarily having cancer itself necessarily, but it might depend on what type of treatments people are going through for their cancer. So certainly if someone is undergoing chemotherapy, for instance, their immune system is going to be not as able to fight infection as someone else. So we are we always ask people who are going through cancer treatment, especially chemotherapy, to be extra careful in terms of their risk for infections, and now even more so. So for instance, you know, in the past, we may have said it was okay for people to continue working no matter what their job was during chemotherapy, whereas now, depending on their exposure to other people in their job place or their workplace, we may caution them maybe not to. So you do have to be a little extra careful if you are going through cancer treatment. On the other hand, I've actually had some patients point out to me that they felt that now was actually a maybe a or at least a few last few months when people were staying home, was maybe a safer time to do chemotherapy because the rest of the world was being more careful than usual. And you know, with everyone else washing hands and wearing masks and all of the things they're doing out there to prevent the virus and everyone else, they actually felt they were perhaps safer than at a time place before this when people were less cautious about those things. So it may be possible, and we are all somewhat hopeful that maybe all the things we're doing to prevent the spread of COVID may also prevent the spread of other illnesses as well, because all of those same precautions will help protect us from things like the flu virus and other illnesses as well.
Dr. Schnapp, thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate the opportunity to get this message out there that that people still need to take care of their routine health screenings. It's very important in overall health.
Dr. Stephanie Schnapp is a breast surgeon and medical director of the SSM Health St. Mary's Hospital Breast Center. Coming up, stroke victims also appear to be waiting too long to seek medical treatment during this pandemic. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on KMOX.
Now, back to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Another big concern we're seeing during this coronavirus pandemic, an increase in stroke patients delaying medical care. Here to talk with us about that is Nancy Jackson. Nancy is the lead stroke program coordinator at SSM Health DePaul Hospital. Nancy, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks, Fred. I'm glad to be on the interview today.
So tell us, what are you seeing and hearing when it comes to stroke patients delaying care?
When COVID really hit late in March, there was certainly a lot less stroke patients coming into the hospital. People were very nervous about coming to the hospital, and so we weren't seeing near as many patients come in. Certainly, the ones we were seeing were very severe, but the numbers were dropping down. Unfortunately, here we are four or five months later, and we're still seeing patients that are coming in, not when the symptoms start, but they're coming in 3 days, 4 days later. And I guess we just need to get the word out to people that our hospitals are doing everything we can to keep them safe, and we really know that patients that come in early when the symptoms start, we have much better opportunities to treat them. We have things we can do as far as medications and treatments to keep strokes from getting worse, sometimes to keep it from being a large stroke to make it a smaller stroke. But we need people to come in soon and not wait to see what's going to happen. They need to really respond right away.
Let's talk about strokes in general. First off, let's go over some of the warning signs of strokes. What should we be aware of?
You know, strokes are not like a heart attack. They don't cause pain in the majority of cases. A stroke will have somebody feeling weak on one side, and it can be just weakness in their hand or in their arm. It can be weak in their leg. It's usually just one side of the body at one time, though. Somebody might notice that their speech doesn't sound right, or if they talk to somebody on the phone, they're either slurred or they're really garbled. It doesn't make much sense. If they look in the mirror and they smile, they're going to see a crooked smile. We call it facial droop because one side of the face looks kind of droopy. Occasionally, people will have some dizziness, and we have people that sometimes lose part of their vision. But the key thing with all of these symptoms, whether it's dizziness or vision or weakness or speech, is that it comes on suddenly. And so when strokes happen, they happen suddenly. Now, you may go to bed normal and wake up with a sudden onset, but other than that, you know, people can usually tell, you know, what they were watching on TV or what they were doing or where they were in church when something happened, because it happens so suddenly. And that's the key for when these symptoms are a stroke.
What should you do if it appears that you're having stroke symptoms?
You know, if you're having stroke symptoms, or you're with somebody who's having symptoms that could be a stroke, you know, you ask them to talk and they can't talk to you. You ask them to smile and it looks weird. And if you ask them to move one side, they're not moving it well. If any of those are there, you need to call 911. You know, you need to get to a hospital as soon as you can, so that we have the opportunity to try these things that can really stop a stroke or prevent it from getting any worse.
Does it make a difference which hospital you go to?
You know, certainly it's best if you go to a stroke-certified hospital. I can tell you in St. Louis, I believe almost every hospital is stroke-certified. You need to get to the fastest place as soon as you can to get medicine to stop it, if possible. Okay. If you have longer distances to come, you know, then you want to be then the 911 people are the ones who are going to have to figure out which is the closest place to get you to. And you know, we have 6 SSM hospitals in the region. All of them have stroke teams that respond whenever there's a stroke called. So we're trying to have people available when you are coming in to the hospital for stroke so that we can move things as quickly as possible to help people do better, I guess, or have as good of a recovery as possible.
What can you do to minimize your risk of having a stroke?
Oh, gosh. The American Heart Association's data actually says 80% of strokes are preventable. And I think in some ways that should really be reassuring. You know, it's like, what can I do to stop myself from having a stroke, especially if I have family members who've had them before? And the things that we need to do to prevent stroke are really the kind of things that we've been hearing about for years. You know, you need to stop smoking if you're smoking, because nicotine can really be hard on your blood vessels. You need to check your blood pressure, find out if you have high blood pressure. Long-term high blood pressure can cause stroke if it's not treated. And that means taking your medicine every day. Don't forget to take your pills or forget to get the prescription refilled. People who've had diabetes are at risk, not early, but people who have diabetes, it's hard to control. So taking good control of your blood sugar. If you have a heart rhythm problem called AFib, that can cause stroke, and taking medicine to prevent that. Also, you can stop the chance of having a stroke with AFib if you take some medicine that's prescribed. Cholesterol, you know, this is where we've always heard about how important our diet is. And, you know, every time I eat something that's not on the diet, there's that little twinge of guilt if I'm eating the ice cream cone or something that's maybe been fried. Because cholesterol actually clogs up the blood vessels. And if it's hard to get blood through, it makes it easier for a stroke to happen. You know, that high cholesterol really lines the inside of the blood vessels and makes it hard to get the blood up into the brain. So those are the primary causes. And I think, you know, they're the same things that can cause a heart attack. And a stroke is a brain attack. It's basically the same thing happening in the brain many times that happens in the heart.
We're talking with Nancy Jackson. Nancy is the lead stroke program coordinator at SSM Health DePaul Hospital. Is there a relationship between COVID-19 and strokes?
That's a good question, Fred. People who've had COVID sometimes have problems where their blood tends to clot more. You know, they get clots in their legs or clots in their heart. They also get clots in their brain. So for the patients that we've cared for with COVID, we have seen some strokes. Not a large number, but we have seen a few people that you wouldn't have thought had a risk for stroke that suddenly was having a stroke. So it is known, it's talked about. It's not a frequent occurrence, but it has happened.
Nancy, what's the main message you want to get out to people?
You know, I want people to know that if they think they might be having a stroke, they need to come to the hospital quickly, that our hospitals have worked very hard to follow all of the CDC guidelines to keep our all of our staff are well protected. We have some very strict visitor policies. We have really done a lot of disinfection and cleaning. Everyone wears masks. It is a safe place to come, and you need to come to the hospital if you're having symptoms. Please don't wait a couple days to see if they're going to go away, because sometimes in a couple days, things have gotten a lot worse.
Nancy, thanks a lot for your time. Really appreciate it.
Okay. You're welcome. Thank you.
Nancy Jackson is the lead stroke program coordinator at SSM Health DePaul Hospital. And that's all the time we have for this week's show. Thanks so much for joining us. I really do appreciate it. If there are parts of this show you want to hear again, please log on to KMOX.com and look under the podcast section, or you can download the radio.com app in favorite KMOX. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Please join us again next week at the same time for another edition of Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.